You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space, a monthly podcast of artist talks, panel discussions, and other events.
Kia ora, my name is Jamie Hanton, and I'm the director of the Physics Room, a contemporary art space dedicated to developing and promoting contemporary art and critical discourse in Aotearoa, New Zealand. Based in central Christchurch since 1996, we assist artists with resources and opportunities to achieve a higher level of professional and creative development and encourage a greater acknowledgement, understanding, and value of contemporary art among New Zealanders. Our goal is to actively seek links between the arts and other areas of cultural production and to involve art as a contributing voice in wider intellectual, social, and political debate. Welcome to episode 13 of Art Not Science. In this episode, we are sharing the artist talk with Eddie Clemens from Kiosk Director's Commentary, now on at the Physics Room. The exhibition explores the history and mysterious disappearance of the kiosk, a small self-contained exhibition space that operated between 2000 and 2010 on the corner of Manchester, Lichfield and High Streets in Christchurch's city centre. Originally commissioned and designed by the Oblique Trust, programming and administration of the kiosk were handed over to the Physics Room Trust in 2003. While the kiosk was much loved, it was often abused by passers-by. In 10 years, it played host to over 100 projects, and then, in late 2010, it mysteriously disappeared. According to the kiosk website, it departed on a voyage to the future. In this exhibition, the kiosk makes a return. Using video, performance, and sculptural installation, Eddie explores the life of the kiosk through a number of perspectives, including his own exhibition experiences, the institutionally recorded history via website text, and anecdotes collected from past artists, staff, and directors. In Kiosk Director's Commentary, the roof of the kiosk is reimagined as a stand-up paddleboard, which carries Clemens on a cinematic journey of homage along the Otakaro Avon River and out to sea. Alongside this film, Clemens' three kiosk works, Blade and Gum from 2003, Blade and Phone from 2009, and The God Particle, 2010, have been remade and represented. Stay tuned to learn more about Eddie's practice, how the exhibition has been simmering away for over a decade, and the great Otakaro Avon River journey.
Well, we'll start with the roof. We'll start with this object here that's also on the sculptural structure behind you, as that's the kind of genesis for the show. And can you take us through that and your experiences with the old kiosk, I guess?
Well, I'll just take you through the three works initially. So first of all, in 2003, I was invited to show up the kiosk. I think Rosemary Ford was the director then, and Jess Johnson was the technician. I just moved up to Auckland. I was doing my MFA at Elam, and I was quite interested in, you know, adolescent antisocial behavior, and I was looking at artists, Gordon Manor Clark and things like that in architecture and things. I grew up in Rotorua, and there was an urban myth in a hydroslide facility there called Leisure World, that people would chew gum, go down the hydroslide and adhere razor blades within it. So that was quite terrifying being a kid back then. So I wanted to, I guess, commodify that. So one small work that I made, yeah, I think maybe it was my second year, was this hermetically sealed blister pack of sugar-free gum and a broken craft knife. It was exactly like a Panadol pack. It had a lozenger hole in it as well, so you could put it on hooks in a shop, or you could smuggle it in your pocket quite in your swimming togs and then go down. But I hadn't quite finished the work, and then Rosemary got a hold of me, and I thought to myself, why don't I just send them instructions to purchase sugar-free Wrigley's chewing gum, strawberry-flavored, and broken impact craft knife, and just adhere it within the kiosk. And I quite like how the kiosk is a sealed entity, and it was very, you know, utilitarian and vandal-proof structure. So I figured it was kind of in keeping with this kind of the idea. And it was the first time that I'd given a performative instruction to do a work, so I found that kind of interesting, and I liked just how sketchy it was. Just, you know, it was contained, it was sealed in this environment. So since it was this very kind of chaotic little object, just this dripping gum and blade, I thought it worked quite well. And then fast forward to 2009, doing the Francis Hodgkin's residency, but I you know, to New York for a research trip, and I remember that being quite fixated on a New York style phone booth, and they have the wraparound steel framing, and on either side they have the perforations of a handpiece, just to signify that it's a, as a telfo. At that time, I was like, oh, that'd be kind of nice to get a jigsaw and maybe cut out that perforation, just, you know, the perforation being like some sort of cutting mark in itself. Then when I got back, I think Kate Montgomery, or Kate being the director, asked me to do another kiosk work. So then I just sent the cutting file to a fabricator in Christchurch to make the phone booth, and then I just instructed them to, with a jigsaw, to cut it out. And the work there, and currently in the show, is I did this similar thing, but this time I cut it out, and it was quite interesting. It took me like 4 jigsaw blades to actually cut it out in well over an hour. It was like quite full on. Like cutting 6 mm steel is quite major. So yeah, I was actually kind of thinking to myself, hey, if I did this in New York, I would have been arrested several times over. Like, it would have just taken hours. So it's a good thing I didn't do it. And then the next iteration was actually 1 year later, 2010. I moved back from Dunedin to Christchurch. In fact, I had a studio directly above this room. This whole building was basically vacant at the time. I did come down to see Blade and Foam, and at that time I realised, I didn't actually realise that was a skate project, but they'd put Full Price's Nucleus, the public sculpture that's there on the corner of is it High Street in Litchfield, right?
Yeah.
And I thought that sculpture was really jarring for the environment. Like Christchurch to me in High Street was a very, I use the word in a very kind way, feral. You know, it was like, you know, it had Cheapskates, Java, Galaxy Records, even Winds down there, you know, all the way up to this Globe and then C4, and obviously Physics Room was in the mail, you know, the old post office. And so I felt like Phil's sculpture was not really in keeping, it was too corporate. And even people instantly joined it with the Westpac, and the Westpac building was visible as well. So with the kind of W's. So I had this cheap and nasty circular saw, and the cheap and nasty circular saws often are quite gadgety, and this version had this red laser guideline that you can tell was totally off anyway, it didn't really work. And on the news around this time, there was a lot of people were importing very powerful lasers, handheld lasers, and beaming them into airplane cockpits. So that was happening, and then also there was the Hadron Collider had just been completed in France, and you know there was this idea that they could discover the God particle, and being that Full Price's work was called Nucleus, I figured, well, it'd be quite nice just to put my skill saw in there and import one of these very powerful lasers, a green dot laser, and just shoot it straight at Phil's work as if I was just going to cut it down. So all those works for me were really fast, and that was, I think, the beauty of the kiosk for me. I just kind of treated it as this quite sketchy kind of notepad of ideas, and I wasn't too... It was quite different from other works that I was doing exhibiting in galleries. And then, you know, I happened to be there when Jane Richardson, the technician and artist working at the Physics Room, and I'd never seen the kiosk open, at how they can, you know, move works in and out of it. It was very convoluted. You had to open this, you had to physically lift the roof off and put it to the side. And I didn't actually do that. Jane was saying to me the other night how heavy it was. But I assumed it was made from polystyrene and fiberglass. It had a fiberglass kind of feel to it. So, the look to it. So thereafter that, immediately I was just like, wow, that would make for a really good raft. And maybe I should take that one day and go down the Avon and film it and then just put the video back into the kiosk. So at that time, I was friends with Sue Pritchard, and she lives right on the river, and I was a couple of kayaks. So I went down the river with her, just, you know, from out by Ireland to kind of the Tannocks a little bit, and, you know, just got a feel for it, and then also did a recce down the river with Michael Bolton, thinking about what was interesting along the river. At that time, there was some art along there. There's the 9/11, was it 9/11? So, you know, things like that. You know, what would be the work? Would the work just be this subversion of me, you know, almost in a vandalistic way, grabbing the roof and taking on a journey and coming back? But anyway, like, following, you know, whatever it was, not long after that was the main, the big earthquake. And I was actually with Aaron, make our way to Hagley Park, and then like get through Hagley. It was the first year that Ellerslie Flower Show was going to be in Hagley Park, and it hadn't quite opened. But get onto the main Hagley Park and field, and you know, a third of it was liquefaction. And then I just kind of I thought to myself, oh, it'd be really great having the raft right now, having the kiosk roof, or you know, what happened to it? And then that was it. That was like, you know, 10 years on. it's like, you know, one of those things. Yeah, I really need that kiosk now.
And people say that art is useless.
And then fast forward, and then it was quite funny just how this project then began was the physics room had moved site to Christchurch Art Gallery, and they were within Christchurch Gallery, but there was like a press release out and didn't at all say they were in Christchurch Art Gallery, and it had this like Google Street Map link, and I clicked on it, and it took me to a building down by the river. And then I had just come off this work with Climb Cities, which was based on, I come from Rotorua, based on the four sister cities of Rotorua, and the sculptural apparatus that I embedded the moving image in as well, just like this work, was a Christmas parade float that I had witnessed that my brother and his friends had made. It was like a space capsule with Star Wars latex masks protruding around it, and they all had, it was a very surreal float that just totally didn't go with anything, didn't have any Santa parade reference at all. It was just very of the time Star Wars. But I watched that go by on my mother's gallery called Canterbury Gallery, because she's from Canterbury, and the gallery's name was Canterbury. It was in McCoy Building on the heart of Rotorua to Tenekai, Namara Street. So anyway, there's that work. And then I also made another work called Open Jeans Shop when I was in Tokyo. And it's kind of similar idea, like you're looking at kind of national and global kind of connections. I won't go into detail about those, but
I was just going to say, this is the point of the talk, you could refer to, this is a mind map that Eddie sent me.
Around that time when we were...
Yeah, about 2017, that kind of joins these projects together.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it all makes sense. So it's fine. We're with you.
Stay with me all the time. And we'll get there. Or we won't. Doesn't matter.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
And then,
sorry, also Jane Shop.
Yeah, I won't go into that. But, well, that was about a store I fortuitously discovered in Tokyo, in an area that wasn't at all touristy, and the proprietor had visited New Zealand 40 years earlier on his honeymoon and loved Auckland so much that he changed the name to Auckland Gin Shop. And it was this inherited, you know, second generation gin shop, and really quite influential for bringing denim into Tokyo. Anyway.
Canterbury Gallery.
So I kind of Jamie that, wouldn't it be great to, you know, my mum's still got all the hand painted signage for Canterbury Gallery. It'd be great to kind of reinstate it and on a Canterbury Gallery. And then perhaps we could show Time Cities or Auckland Jean Shop, da 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 da. And then that's when Jamie said, oh, well, we're doing a lot of off site projects as well. And then I was just like, oh, I've got this other idea about potentially floating the kiosk roof, or maybe we could bring the kiosk into the gallery out of context. And that's when Jamie said, oh, the kiosk is no longer there. And then suddenly it all kind of clicked that perhaps maybe there's some extreme localized liquefaction that took the kiosk away, and maybe that's like a some sort of way in that kind of conceptually formed this project a little more. Yeah. And then also since it vanished, it kind of disappeared. And Jamie can talk a bit more about that, like investigating council.
Well, I think the serendipitous timing was that around then, I had heard from one of the arts advisors at Christchurch City Council, and he said, I think I've seen a kiosk in one of our storage facilities in like Wolston or Bromley or something. And I was like, wow, really? Like, and I think that was kind of one of the starting points. And so can we go and see it? Can we go and find it? And then the communications with the staff member kind of became vaguer and vaguer, and they kind of stepped back from the initial statement that the kiosk was in the storage facility. And then so we kind of internally mounted a bit of a search, going through minutes, going through other documents, other official organizational documents, looking for anything to suggest where the kiosk might have gone to between 2010 and 2011, because it was still, we didn't know what had actually happened to it. I contacted Vanessa Coxhead, I contacted Kate Montgomery, and neither of them knew really what had happened to it. There was a kind of a thought that it had just been taken away by the landscapers who were putting the tram lines down High Street in preparation for the 2011 Rugby World Cup, which was happening. And the physics room actually started developing and designing a new kiosk to replace the old kiosk at that time. Mm. And Jamie Richardson, again, had started kind of putting the schematics together for the new kiosk.
Which looked more like that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's much more
hubier
and sharp-edged.
Mm.
Yeah.
So then it was like, well, instead of making a work just about this idea of floating it down, why don't we make it more inclusive and look at my previous history? And that's when we discovered I've got the record for showing the most in the kiosk, which is like, when I got asked the third time, I was just like, oh man, the kiosk maybe is run its course. It's like scraping the barrel there. But I was always up for it, you know? I'll be like, yeah, man, I'll do it every week if you want. And then it became like, well, why don't we look at the greater history of it and include everybody, we'll try and include everybody. And that's when, we started thinking about making a little book based on it. But other facets that you might not know, obviously,
Michelle's put this together beautifully. This is
over lockdown.
This is the 113 projects in the kiosk over 10 years. It's an incomplete history because the data we're working with was incomplete. The project itself is this kind of wonderful encapsulation of art history and art discourse as well. I mean, you read some of the descriptions for the works in here, and it's just something you wouldn't hear that in 2020.
Yeah, it's pretty loose. So. and then I guess what else is. What you're seeing here is the Bleak Trust logo, which is a donut. So the Bleak Trust website has been archived via the physics room. So if you look at the kiosk or Bleak Trust, you'll find a portal into it. And it's like this great resource because it's this website that was probably generated in probably 99 or but it looks totally fresh. It's like, you know, Jonathan Nickel, who was part of Bleak Trust, designed these logos. Obviously, it's kind of, it's interesting in itself that the logo was this cube, but then it became this elliptical shape. If you listen to the movie, the audio over top is the director's commentary with myself, Jamie, Paul Sutherland, who was the chairperson, Paul Johns, the artist who for the first couple of years was a caretaker because the physics room took it over after 2 years. And then also Jelaine Stevenson, who was really the spearhead behind the kiosk and a key person in the Bleak Trust. The reason why we're sitting on donuts is the Bleak Trust logo was a donut. I couldn't get a real story behind why they kind of chose a donut, but what I found fascinating on the website when I downloaded the little tiny little 10 kilobyte file was that it was saved out as donut. So that kind of
made the JPEG was donut.
Yeah, and then I painted also the roof, obviously not grey, but orange, or rescue orange to be exact. And I guess that's in some way of thinking about, does the kiosk need to be rescued, or does the kiosk need a proper send-off, or, you know, do we just need to go out to sea with it, or almost like a Viking funeral source, you know? we lit up a smoke flare, or I lit up a smoke flare when I get to Sumner. And whether or not, I guess the bigger question is, does the kiosk need to be brought back, or what, you know, is Christchurch lacking a space like that?
I think
is it important in a national?
And I think that's what we kind of found with the project investigating that and investigating what it meant to certain people. That's what you find when you kind of dig back through social history like that, is that it was super significant to some people, but it was absolutely insignificant to a whole lot of other people. I mean, we spoke to artists and they were like, I don't remember showing it to Kiosk. And I was like, well, you showed it two times, these are the works. I don't really want to remember those projects. I mean, like, I don't want to think about this anymore. That was a thing that happened and it's gone now. And even talking to Jelaine about the donut, you know, we're kind of searching for meaning and sifting through this stuff. And I think she just said, oh, we just thought it was a cool shape. You know,
just check it on.
And there's been lots of those like lovely discoveries in there. But we did send out surveys to a bunch of the artists who we had contact details for, who had shown at the kiosk, and kind of just asked for their thoughts around what it meant to them, how it fit into their practice more broadly. And, you know, it was really heartening actually to hear, you know, as a curator, to think about the way the space, you know, helped people work through ideas or gave them, like Regan Gentry said, that was kind of his first foray into working in public space. And of course, he'd gone on to kind of have, you know, massive commissions around Christchurch. Jess Johnson said she had been painting all through art school and had kind of come out painting, and this was the first time that she'd worked in kind of three-dimensional space almost, and was thinking through it in an installation way. Dane Mitchell said he'd come out of art school like 2 years ago, and this was an amazing way to test an idea for him. So it's really heartening to hear those kinds of things.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
What I love about your practice, Evie, is I think in your artist statement you say it's orthogonal. That's things that come off right angles. So that's why you have the mind map there, because there is such an amazing and watertight internal logic to Evie's practice, and all of the elements within the show, you can kind of go down to the right, or up, and they can connect into one another. Even down to the kind of the slicey sharpness of the blades in all of Evie's kiosk works, which stretch over 9-7 years. And we were going to call it director's cut, but that was also probably a step too far. It was a liberal step.
Yeah, it's a liberal step. It would have been quite easy just to make a show just about this idea, just a beautiful shot down the river. But there's so much rich history involved. So, yeah, so it needed to encapsulate a lot more than that. So,
this is what's kind of interesting about the show we were talking about it the other day. In a kind of departure for you, a new departure for your practice, in that there's not a lot of editing in terms of the audio visual material that we've got in the show. I mean, this is kind of the panel discussion that you were here, if we went in the talk, is kind of 90 minutes long, I think, and that was everything.
Everything, yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's worth listening to. Yeah. But it's pretty raw. Right? So,
And even this was, I mean, I think we've got about 4.5-5 hours.
This is quite brutally. Yeah, it's pretty. It's quite the cuts obviously are just between Jamie and I. Jamie's wearing a GoPro on his chest, and I've obviously got the GoPro on the sup, which you can see up there now. So I just flip between dots and then just use like a Gaussian blur to show kind of a sense of time past. But it's pretty raw. So in one regard, it's the sharp edges are still involved in the work in that regard. But there is a health and safety. That's why we designed the logbook. I guess it's a little bit of an Easter egg. If you ever hire an elevated work platform, like a scissor lifter or a telescopic lifter, you have in the basket, which is usually tubular metal, you have a little yellow pouch, which I'm gesturing to that one. On the kiosk, within it has this logbook that you fill out and you sign that you've inspected the equipment and it's all safe to work on. So I thought that was just an interesting, again, you know, playing on standing up pedal boards and this idea of elevated work platforms. But I figured it was a nice vehicle, so to speak, to then reformat the kiosk or complete trusts archive. Yeah.
So you gave Jamie some health and safety training before you've thrown them in the river?
Well, I said to him about a year earlier, I said, you need to get a dry suit, or you need to get dry suits, because we're going to die. You know, even in summer, this is pretty cold.
Yeah.
And obviously we didn't know the weather, like I came down
about 10 days ago.
10 days ago. Yeah. So it was a case of if we really need to film everything by Sunday, latest at Monday, but that would be pushing it. And the Wednesday night if I came down, everybody was just saying, God, it hasn't stopped raining for like forever. And I walked in through town coming back, and then the river seemed like a meter higher, and it was just like, it's like, you know, white water basically. And I was just like, what am I, because Jamie was like, the night before or the day before, it's like, well, maybe we could just green screen this. I was kind of thinking, that would have been a good idea, Jamie, if we did that about a year ago. But I was thinking like, and then Friday, it just turned into the best day. Oh, right. It was just this idyllic.
Yeah.
It just looked so placid. And then it was kind of nice the next day. So we did this journey from the Kate Shepherd Memorial Walk, which you can see us kind of get in the water. This is out of Botanic Gardens, and we got off at the boat sheds, and then we went to the gondola?
So where the professional punters launched beside our city, Ōtautahi, the old brick building there.
And then we went up to Margaret Mahe's playground. That's an interesting voyage because we passed. We're almost up to it, but we're just about to land at the boat sheds. You can see how Jamie exits the donuts.
With elegance.
Elegance, definitely. It's very muddy, there was a show, it was quite interesting. I lifted out though, you can see your hands.
Was it the voluntary exit
from the donuts? It was kind of one of those things at the point of getting in and getting out, I hadn't thought about how to get in or out. And so it was like, how am I gonna get out of this thing? And luckily, the dock, the wooden built out dock from the boat ship was there, and I just grabbed onto a rope tie and just hauled myself off the donut.
But the Canadian geese, that's the problem, right? All the landing sites are just covered in, very big Canadian geese. And then the next leg after this is like a more art leg where we pass, Julian Morrison's sculpture and
the Gormley. We did pass you.
And then the next day, 2 days later, we started by Harrington's Brewery, or the old Harrington's Brewery. That was an awful day because it was a headwind, and we were doing this against the tide. Ayman's quite tidal. And the further you go up, you're affected by that. So we're like a good cycle out, like 12 hours out. But the headwind was awful. So standing up, I was literally blown back. I was like, became a sail. So I had to do a lot of that kneeling. But that was hugely fatiguing. I was zigzagging all the time because that's all you could do on that. And then Jane was basically just spinning. So, so much wasted energy, right? And then Jamie couldn't go very far that day. So I just, it's kind of like, I want to go a little bit more, And then these guys are like, it's quite fast. And then, I'll do it. I was just dead. I got some rowing sheds. I could barely stand up. I was just like totally jittering. And it's like, because I'd never stood up paddled. And I was telling everybody I saw down the river, like, I've never stood up at all. That's going to be some conversation. Nobody would, eh? That's interesting. It was funny, towards the end, Jim and I hear this guy yelling out, GoPro, GoPro. And we thought he was just going to chuck his GoPro into the water and it was a floaty. It was like that orange thing around my thing, there's a floaty. And I thought it was just going to bob along with us, and that was pretty cool. But he ended up, and we, you know, paddle up to it, and it's a dobro, and I've never heard this expression, a dobro. It was a double brown, and now they're double brown, so that's quite good. Anyway, this, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And then the following Monday, then we went out to the estuary, and yeah, lit the flare. We had this window of about an hour. To light an orange smoke flare, you've got to get about, what, a dozen?
Yeah, 12 different agencies. Coast Guard, Rescue New Zealand, police, Harbour Master.
And so we had this time frame, and then this, we wanted to light up somewhere around, you know, just the mouth of the estuary. So yeah, it was very time critical. We just had to let it go. And then that's how we, there it is. Yeah, it's like
Eddie and the Gormley.
Jamie, like a few days prior, was like, yeah, it's just down there. And I was just like, where is it? You can hardly see. And then I'm like going up to it, and I'm like, oh, it's so small. It's so small. Like I was going to touch it, I was like, oh, there's no point touching it.
You didn't damage it.
Didn't damage it, yeah. Look, I'm just towering above that.
Oh, we should put you there.
I know.
Something on the road. Just, yeah. Put a
cement.
Yeah. And obviously, we go by the almost completed convention center. That's kind of interesting. well, interesting because they've shut down Gloucester Street, right? That's kind of beautiful.
I mean, that's what's great about this project is that, you know, we were talking about the big vinyl kiosk that you've got there, and, you know, it sits in situ, but it also, it sits in an environment, and you can see through it, and you can see around it, and it's indicative of what Christchurch was then. This project, this does it in a similar way.
Yeah, 2020. So the vinyl on the walls of above the shelves is the documentation of when it was in situ. So the Blading Gum, obviously 2003, and you can certainly see like Dick Smith's.
Yeah.
And that image is only 7 kilobytes, and you can see like a flower bed, and then the next one, Blading Gum. That might be Simon Lawrence getting into that car. And then the God Particle, yeah, you can see a bit further down High Street, like the southern, wasn't the southern?
Excelsior. And those beautiful palm trees outside there, you know.
Where are they?
Yeah,
they're gone.
Yeah.
Oh, are they gone?
I think so. There's only a couple there.
I think there's still a duplicate, that's fine.
Yeah.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
Are there any questions at the moment for
you? Yeah. This is the director commentary.
Yeah, so on the top of this is the director's commentary. So the audio.
I'm unclear as to who the director is.
that's the idea. Yeah.
Okay, cool. That's fine.
I wasn't making any calls, mate. I mean, the green screen was next, so I was just like,
Jamie,
what have we got out here?
Jamie's like, do I have to go in the room? It's the director's commentary. On the river, that's what that means. Yeah. I call someone all the directors, like, I wanted. Emma and Rosemary and Emma Bacon and Rosemary Ford and Kate Montgomery, and then Steve Claylin was
after
Emma. Yeah. And that would have been really great. But logistically, to get everybody here for a couple of weeks and hope the weather was great,
right?
It wasn't going to happen. So yeah, next piece of thing was the current director. He was hoping to get out of it.
But I guess it just is more towards, you know, that genre of, you know, DVD extra that you've kind of played with before with the director's card.
Yeah. So in other works like Collector's Edition and then Screen U. So I'm quite interested, obviously, in sculpture and embedding moving image within that, but also the sculpture becomes obviously a prop or a narrative within the movie. So this is very much, obviously, like there's a performative object within that sculpture arrangement, and that's also the vehicle where the camera was mounted to. And the projectors there, etc. And so you're seeing the bare bones, the sculpture there is, you know, the sheet metal removed, and you can see all the workings within there. And I'm also like within like the special edition or collector's edition, the making of that's in there, and also the director's commentary. So it's all been very self-aware or self-reflective within itself, very, very self-aware. For me, it's just been a progression to get to this point, and it always seems with video work or work that I do, when it comes to an artist talk, there's always the stories behind the making of the show and all these little extra things that don't make it So the idea that, yeah, the director's commentary, there's a director's cut, obviously, as I mentioned, that could have been just a really sublime movie. And also the director's cut could have been playing on, as Jamie said, the, kind of all the sharp edges of the work, the fins, the skill saw, the jigsaw, and the craft knife blade. Yeah.
You mentioned that there'd been some research into making a new
video.
Yeah.
That was in 2010 when so the physics room received notification from the council that the tram lines were going to be coming down High Street and running straight through the old kiosk. So at that point, they started thinking about what a new kiosk might look like, and it was designed, and there's a half finished application to council and on the server that sets out that. But then September 2010 hits, so you have the first earthquake, and that kind of disrupts that whole idea. Then Kate leaves the physics room, Kate Montgomery leaves the physics room, the new director comes in, and then you go February 22nd. So within kind of 5 months, the idea of a new kiosk kind of just gets completely derailed. But all of that stuff is still there, the design is still there. So that was also what we had talked about, maybe, is like, well, does this show then lead on to
that's what I was thinking.
A new kiosk? Like, do we get a new kiosk out of it? Is that important, or is that interesting still?
Just Jamie Richardson, the technician there, he started designing a new, there is plans for a new one. You know, it's very much based on the original logo being square. And since Jamie used to install in the Ecliptical kiosk, he really hated it. You know, it's just like this awful thing to deal with in terms of, you know, accessing it. So yeah, it would have been interesting, but I think at this point we were talking about what could be maybe it could be a boat next time, or I don't know, who knows. it could be on the tram, it could be a little moving, I don't know, who knows.
There's that little kiosk thing down by C1, isn't it?
Yes, that's a way you'll work, yes, just for that work. And that is, I mean, that's the interesting thing about kind of these kiosks, is that they're so much simpler when you just have one object in there forever. It is hermetically sealed, and you don't have to kind of change it open, because that's when all of those interesting, how do we open it up, how do we then secure it, how do we make it bandit proof, all of those things start coming into play.
Because we discovered in the director's commentary of Paul Johns, who was saying that initially they had to drill out the rivets.
Every time, and then
put them back in, you know, trust rivets. What, you know, what an ordeal. So, and then they modified it again. Yeah.
It was a constant problem for the staff and, you know, and the board, I guess, as well, but really for the staff having to drill those rivets out every time to do it. And so you just be dreading going down the road to do.
In public,
you know, to change it over in public and the palaver, and it wasn't really a good design. And I think Jamie was really attempting to tidy all of that up, but then it just got disappeared, and the whole earthquake business kind of just derided it all. It kind of fell aside. But it, another interesting thing about its history is that it got shot once, and that was, we felt, was a bit of critical commentary for the public.
Well, Paul Johnson has this great photo, and you can hear it in director's commentary. He's showing us this photo, and we're trying to quickly say all this photo is. But somebody got to pick up a street cone and chuck it right through the window. It's this fantastic shot of a street cone.
It's great.
Not to mention, I mean, like, you know, Kate, Vanessa, and her, so we've seen that survey to start from us, and Vanessa's survey, she said, Paul Johns was getting sent down here to clean it every other day, kind of tagging off that kind of gutted up, I mean, it's,
But maybe that was, as mentioned, like, you know, High Street was such a different vibe back then, whereas now, you know, food prices work suits the rebuild, right? So mm-hmm. almost like the town's been built around
that's one of the reasons we have that's why, you know,
the future is still
bright. So who knows, maybe it was in some of its time and it might
By and large, the artists who showed there, it was a an enjoyable experience and helped to build their career.
And to try new ideas, you know, like it was such, to have such strict parameters is pretty cool sometimes. You know, I really enjoyed playing with the idea. I mean, there was, you know, there was all sorts of treatments. So there was a, someone did kind of like a Christo wrap around it, like it was called Minty. Then someone did a trade with Phantom. Who was that? Someone did a trade with Phantom to use it as a bollard and traded this, the area of the kiosk for the area of another bollard in Christchurch and said, I'll put my artwork on your bollards and we'll have the advertising on the kiosk. It's for a show. And someone did a smashed, like, had done vinyl work that was a smashed glass replica, so the kiosk looked like it had been smashed. There were also great radio mini programs, kind of coordinated by Zeta and Adam. It was special.
It was definitely a thing, wasn't it, for a while, for a few years. They'd go to the kiosk and see what's there. See, yeah, well, you knew he was there, but you hadn't seen it yet. So you go down and see Eddie's work, or go down and listen to Zeta and Adam's.
I kind of think it's like, it was like similar sort of role as the lift space in the old High Street project. It's like, you know, an interesting enough space that, you know, mid-career artists would be enticed to show in it, as well as people straight out of art school or whatever, so.
Cool. Any kind of final questions for you?
You're going to be writing down in springtime again?
Well, the show's on for like 6 weeks, so I'm pretty keen to come down and go through the botanics or wherever. Maybe we could do the art league. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe it's better than the botanics.
I think we should wait to summer, probably. Mm.
Really?
would you have like a flotilla of us?
The thing, like, you know, 10 of us go down there.
Just rock it up, you know.
It's stunning. It's a wonderful way to see the city.
It's crystal clear through the botanic, so you see eels and cell phones and credit cards and credit cards.
lime scooters.
Lime scooters.
Cool. Okay. Thanks everybody for coming. Thank you, Eddie, for your amazing work and going down the river.
Oh, very bright.
That was Eddie Clemens talking about his exhibition, Kiosk, Director's Commentary. We hope to see you in the gallery at 301 Montreal Street, so you can check out the returned kiosk. During Level 1, the gallery will be open Tuesday to Friday, 11 to 5, and Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 4. Thank you for listening, and tune in next month on Friday, 21st of August, at 8 p.m. for our next episode of Art Not Science. Ma te wa!
The Physics Room is generously supported by Creative New Zealand, the Christchurch City Council, the Rata Foundation, Three Boys Brewery, Scientech, Resine Paints, and the Crater Rim.